See what I mean? You should have some knowledge of the Tibetan words, and I'll simplify them for you, and you don't have to worry about that. And it's going to be strict, and you will advance along a certain course, and you have to catch the earlier courses, and then you'll get the later courses. There will be 25 notebooks like this at the end of 5 years, if you stick it out. You'll have 25 of these notebooks. And then when you have your own students or you're going to do a retreat, you can just pull down the notebook that applies to what you want to do. We go to gemology school, some of the people here, and they give you this kind of thing. It's very nice. You know, when you have a certain question, you pull down that notebook and it's there. It's what you studied in gemology school. And it's right there. It's right ready for you to use. So that's the idea of the notebooks. So if you open your notebook, the first thing you'll see is the syllabus, the first white page. And that's what we're going to cover each week. Week means two classes. For you, it means Monday and Thursday nights, 7 o'clock. Okay? In the first week, you're responsible to read the first 40 pages of the little book that's in your, that's in the flap. Okay? Anybody not have it? They have it. You didn't get a book or a notebook? Notebook is okay.
What is he?
We can share.
Give her a book.
Notebook. No, it's okay.
Is that an extra?
We can share.
We can share. They're going to share. No, I'm printing some more over the weekend.
Okay. How about these books?
Are you sure? We had a few more people than I expected. So.
Oh, no, that's mine.
That's mine. You alright?
Yeah.
Do you have a yellow book?
Yeah.
That little book? Yeah. Okay. Alright, so you have to read the first 40 pages of that book before Monday. Okay. It's not such a big deal. It's fun. The first part is about the childhood adventures of some monk. Alright. This book was written by... Anything I put up here, you're responsible for. Unless I tell you otherwise. Tsongkhapa live.
Chan Tsongkhapa.
His name means this. Tsongkha. Tsongkha is a particular town in eastern Tibet. Alright? And Pa means a person from that town. So if you're from Pasa, for example, you might be Pasawa. If you're from Tsongkha, you're Tsongkhapa. Alright? His name was Tsongkhapa.
Do you want me to do that?
Okay.
Yeah,
yes.
And the keys are in the door.
In the door?
Yeah.
J means Lord. Alright? Lord. It's considered impolite in Buddhism to call your teacher by his, just his name, his first name, like Gyeongla. You know, poor Gyeongla Rinpoche. All his students call him, hey Gyeongla. You know, considered very impolite. Okay? Improper. So J means like Lord Tsongkhapa. Tsongkhapa the Great. Alright? Yeah, we'll try to do that. Sometimes I slip, you can correct me. Right? We put it on the book as Tsongkhapa because most Westerners would get lost if we added too many words on it. So it's Tsongkhapa.
So it's Lord from Tsongkha.
Yeah, it's really the Lord from Tsongkha.
The Lord from Tsongkha.
And Tsongkha literally means something to do with onion fields, but don't worry about it. There's been some very bad translations of his name like that. It's just Tsongkhapa. His monk's name, the name he got when he became a monk, is Lobsang Thakpa. Right. I was in Manhattan. You can sit. Sorry. Next week we'll have more chance. Lobsang Thakpa. Lobsang means pure mind. Lo means mind. Sang means pure. And Thakpa means famous. His biography comes in the yellow book. You can read about him. Basically, he was born in eastern Tibet. He studied with the greatest lamas of his time. He was like, in the west, the Wild West, he was like a, what do you call that? Gunslinger. And he went all around Tibet and debated the best debaters in Tibet. So he would take on anybody. And he went from monastery to monastery, Sakya monasteries, Kagyu monasteries. He was a Kagyu. His first teacher gave him the name Karma. And he studied very, very deeply. He ended up in Lhasa. At that time, none of the three great monasteries was there, Ganden, Jebung, or Sera. And he was such a great scholar that he attracted other great scholars, other great monks. And the ones that you would know are, the first Dalai Lama was one of his most famous students. There was another great Lama named Gyaltsabje, who was one of his students. And another one named Kedubje. Gyaltsabje and Kedubje were the greatest scholars of the day, of the time. And there's a famous story that how they came to challenge Jetsun Kapa to a debate shootout. And there are a lot of stories, supernatural stories, about what happened. They never made it even into the hall without being humiliated. And it was some kind of amazing story. When they went to hear him speak and they went to interrupt him and challenge him, and they ended up, one of them, to disrespect the Jetsun Kapa, got up on the throne with him as he was teaching and said, "Well, I could teach as well as you." And then he listened for a few minutes, and then he got down on the, a little bit lower. And then after a few minutes more, he made prostrations, and after a few minutes more, he took off his hat and became his student. So he's incredible. Gyaltsabje's books on Buddhism are so deep that in the monastery, we study them every year for 30 days straight, 16 hours a day, public debating with 500 monks, and no one has ever reached the end of the book. In 22 years, some people are going for 22 years to the winter debates. No one has even reached the third or fourth chapters. His works are so so amazing that no one has ever reached these the final chapters. And Tsongkhapa was his teacher. Tsongkhapa wrote 10,000 pages of commentaries in Buddhism. I would say, in my opinion, he's the greatest commentator on Buddhism ever, after the Buddha. No one has ever matched what he wrote. What he wrote is incredible. If you could learn to read those things, it would be wonderful. And not many have been translated. I'd say only maybe 5 or 10% have been translated. So you can read his works. He wrote what we is usually considered the greatest Tibetan book of all time, which is Lamrim Chemo.
Which is Tsongkhapa.
Lam means path. Path. Okay. Rim means step. Step on the path. Stage of the path. Okay. Stage or step. And Chemo means great. The great. Sometimes on a very, very holy work you put a feminine ending, which is what Mo is. Because wisdom is considered to be female. Like at the beginning of the Heart Sutra, we bow down to the female form in honor of the feminine side, wisdom side, knowledge side. So that's the great steps of the path. It's about 1,000 pages long. In fact, it's right here. This is a new printing of it from Tibet, but normally it would be about this big. You know, it would be a big book. And in that book, he put the essence of all the four schools. All the great schools of Buddhism are summarized in the Lamrim Chemo. And what he did was he took all this heavy-duty philosophy and he put it into a series of steps that you can do, that any one person can do. He took the teachings on karma from the Abhidharma. He took the teachings on the way karma works from the mind-only school. He took what he needed from the logic schools of the Pramana teachings. And he took like that from every school the important steps, and then he arranged it all in a certain order. And there is no other work which takes all the five books that you're going to study, the five great books of Buddhism, and puts them all in one order that you can reach Buddhahood if you study that. Okay, studying Madhyamika or mind only, or studying middle way by itself, studying emptiness by itself can't liberate you. It can't make you a Buddha. Studying the Lama Rinpoche can. So he took the great five books that a monk studies, and he put them in the order that you have to understand to reach Buddha. And that was 1,000 pages long. He wrote a medium one that's about, I think it's about 200 pages long. Then he wrote a brief one which is about 10 pages long. Then he took a challenge, he undertook a challenge to put it in a poem, everything he knew. And that book is called, Lamso Namsum. Lam means what?
Path.
Okay. So means principle or main. Kali, who's the Tso of the Shakyas? Shakya Tso. That's Shakya. Shakya.
Shakya. Oh, Shakyamuni.
Yeah. Okay. That's the most common place where this word occurs. The head of the Shakya clan was Buddha himself. Buddha was a prince. Gautama Buddha was a prince of a certain race of people named Shakyas, which is not to be confused with Sakya, which is a Tibetan tradition. So Lam Tso means what? Principal path. Okay. Nam means type. And Sum means three. So Jetsun Kapa, he wrote 36 volumes, 10,000 pages of books. He knew people couldn't digest it all, and we can't. You can't. I mean, very few people can read it. So he wrote the Lama Rinpoche, only 1,000 pages, which is still pretty difficult. Then he wrote the Lama Rinpoche, 200 pages, for people who couldn't digest that. Then he wrote Lama Rinpoche, which is about 10 pages, for people who couldn't digest that. Then he wrote Lamso Namsum as an absolute minimum. If you study Lamso Namsum, and if you can get it in your mind, you will become a Buddha. You can reach Buddha. On the basis of those 14 verses, you can become a Buddha. Absolute minimum that anyone could give you. So it's a very wonderful book. It's a very wonderful text. According to Tsongkhapa, who wrote 10,000 pages of what I believe and what most people who read his material well, maybe the greatest Buddhist commentator of all time, he said, if you read these 14 verses and if you can understand them well, practice them well, it's enough. You will become a Buddha. You don't have to go through the whole 5-year course. Okay. We will. Why? Because for the 14 verses to really become part of you, you have to study deeply. And you have to study over and over again. You have to hear it over and over and over again. And then it sinks in. Buddhist teachings cannot be understood on the first hearing, or even on the 20th hearing. And Tom can tell you, I don't know, 20 years? 15 years. Yeah. We've been students of the same Lama for 15 or 20 years. And every time you go, he goes over some book that you've heard before. And then you suddenly understand things that you never understood before. They dawn on you. Especially if you're really trying hard to practice it. You keep having deeper and deeper understandings of it. It never gets old. You never reach the real deepest part of it. So Lamso Namsum is the text that you're studying. We translated the title as Principal Teachings of Buddhism because in English that's what people need to understand what's in the book. But really the name of the book should be The Three Principal Paths. Okay? Three Principal Paths. It has been mistranslated many times as three principal parts of the path, which is wrong. Okay, why is it wrong? Path in Buddhist philosophy means dhokpa. 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 What does dhokpa mean? I ask you. I'll go ahead to the fourth course, okay? Basic Buddhist logic. If I had to divide all of the world into two parts, what do you think it would be? All things in the world divided into two parts. What's a good
existent
decision?
Non-existent.
I'm talking things, which means they exist.
Oh.
It's a good answer, though. It's a good start. That's actually one way of doing it.
Permanent and temporary?
That's good. Yeah, that happens to be it. More like changing and unchanging. Okay. Changing and unchanging. And we'll get... He wants to ask a question, but I'll anticipate it. Changing things are very easy to find. Unchanging things are difficult to find. The Buddha said all things are impermanent. It doesn't mean that Buddhism doesn't accept that there are unchanging things. He meant certain kinds of things. And well, you'll learn that. It'll take time. Okay. Give me an example of a changing thing. Nitya. Changing thing.
Life.
Okay, life. Is life physical, mental, or neither?
Everything.
Huh?
Everything.
We say it has to break down into one of those three.
But you say physical?
Physical, mental. Like this. Mental, like my ideas. Or neither, like Mike. Which is neither physical or mental. It's an idea. Okay. It's a concept. Is he doing anything? Did he? Not yet. We have a
experience. The cleanliness of the floor is an impermanent thing.
No, life is what?
Physical.
Yeah, we can say physical, okay. The Abhidharma in the second chapter, I think, it says Sokni Trudam Dushiyo, which means life is warmth and consciousness. Okay. So how about cold-blooded animals? Anyway, we can call it physical. Are there any changing things that are not physical? Okay.
Changing things that are not physical.
We divided now the world into changing and unchanging. And we're seeing if there's any categories of changing. Are all changing things physical?
No.
Well, give me one that's not.
Feelings change.
Yeah, feelings are mental. Okay, feelings are mental. So far we have changing things divided into mental and physical. And there's one more category of changing things that's not mental or physical. And that's principles, concepts, laws, like the very idea of K. K is not K's body. And K is not K's mind. K is a concept that we apply to your body and mind. And that's what we call the third category of changing things. This is not on your quiz. Now name me an unchanging thing. Not you.
Space.
How about Robin?
Space.
She said space. What does space mean? Is it where the satellites fly around in?
No, any undivided or undividable.
Any place between two places? Like the space between the two walls?
No, it's
how would you define space?
As something that can't be divided.
Oh, but it can into the four directions. It's an old debate.
Wow.
No, they say that. That's an old debate. That's an old monastery debate. It can be divided. It has parts. Eastern space, western space, northern space. Up and down.
Depends on your
orientation. Yeah, but it has space. Anyway, space means this. Space means the absence of any. It's defined as the absence of any hard, of any physical, concrete thing. Okay. It's, if you really think carefully about space, and this is again about 2 years from now, you're going to study this. There's space where this pen is in. And when I take the pen out of the space, does the space change?
Yeah.
Does it change when I put something in it? No, it's always there. It will always be there. The earth can come and go. The universe can come and go. But the place where it was is unchanging. Whether things move in and out of it is a different matter, but it never changes. It's almost the idea of place. Place doesn't change. It's unchanging. It is an example of an unchanging thing. It exists. It's there. If it weren't there, I couldn't put the pen in it. But it never changes. The pen can be in it or out of it, but it never changes. It'll always be there. It doesn't change. So anyway, why did I bring that up?
I forgot.
Lam?
He was playing the...
No.
So where does Lam fit in there?
Oh,
is Lam physical, mental, a concept, or is it unchanging? Path. The path that takes you to Buddhahood. The path that removes all the suffering you ever had. All the physical pain you ever had and all the hurt you ever had in your mind.
Is it a concept?
Could be. Is it a concept?
Isn't it the process of changing your concepts from unhealthy ones to healthy ones?
Yeah. There are, by the way, physical paths, right?
Sure.
There's
path through the woods.
Ninth Avenue, unfortunately.
No, but the path of changing your concepts from
unhealthy ones. Well, and in fact, the word, Tibetan word Lam does mean, you know, we call this Langa, Langa Guba, Ninth Avenue. But obviously we're not talking about a physical path. We're talking about, and normally you would think a concept. Okay? The ideas that are presented in Buddhism. Right? But that's not, it's not that. I mean, that's what you would think. But Lam, in Tibetan philosophy, means Topa. Topa means realization. High idea. Great idea. And that's what?
Mental.
Realization. No?
It's mental.
It's a mental substance.
It's an idea.
It's a state of mind.
But it's change.
Of course. Unfortunately. Or fortunately. You can lose lams, and you can get lams. We're trying to get lams. Lam, topa means realization in the sense of something that you realize spiritually. That's what Lam really means in Buddhism. And there's a whole, you'll study it. There's three or four synonyms. And it's a very beautiful subject. What is a Lam? So to translate it as three principal parts of the path is wrong. It's not a path, a conceptual thing. It's not the way to Buddhahood or something like that. It's the very ideas which will make you a Buddha. It's the attitudes or states of mind that will make you a Buddha. Mental. Three principal paths. Okay, what are they? Glad you asked.
Is Michael Tupac possible being from this concept?
No. It just makes nouns out of things. Don't worry about it. No, you'll learn. And it gives you what we call bakchak. Bakchak means you've seen something so many times that you assume the next time you see something leading up to that, that it's going to be the same. So we have a dog who pees on everything. So when she saw the dog walk over here, she had a bakchak. And you're going to get a bakchak for Tibetan language. I mean, towards a few months from now, you've got so many dokpa, lamtos, jemmos. I'll start putting the Tibetan letters, and it'll feel natural to you. I'll sneak you into Tibetan language. But right today is English letters. I'd like you to memorize these Tibetan in these English letters. Okay, it's good for you. All right. So I might not talk about what Nyanjung means. I might just talk about Nyanjung all the time. And you'll go home and say, I wonder if I got Nyanjung yet or not. Then when you have time to study Tibetan, Nyanjung is the first Lam. Okay. Nyanjung is the first Lam. Lam is a path, which means topa, which means realization. Nyanjung is the first attitude or state of mind of the three that all Buddhism it boils down to only three ideas. If you have those three ideas, you understand all of Buddhism. In the book, you'll see there's a word in Tibetan and in Sanskrit which means master of Buddhist teachings, like Kangyurwa, someone who understands, who's read the whole canon, 4,500 works, and knows what they all say. And in the book, he'll say, when I say master of Buddhist teachings, I don't mean that you've read all those 4,500 books and understood them thoroughly and maybe memorized them. You're not. If you have only three ideas, you're a master of Buddhist teaching. You only need those three ideas. Yeah.
Do you mean more specifically Mahayana Buddhist teachings?
No, all of them. If you have the Lam Tsum Nam Tsum in your mind, you're a master of all the Buddhist teachings. Period.
Well,
that's what it is to be a master of the Buddhist teachings.
That's number two.
Okay. Nyanjung. Okay. Nyanjung means renunciation. You can also call it disgust with this life. Okay? Disgust with life. And we'll study it. We'll study it. Okay? Is it true that every single thing in your world is pain? Is it true that every single thing about your life is bad? Is there any good thing in your life? Okay. Or is it really true that everything is in your life is suffering? Okay. And we'll work with that. We'll talk about it. It's a big question. I mean, Buddha said it is. Everything about your life right now is suffering. Even the things that seem to be going well. Our suffering, and we have to debate it, and it's kind of hard to understand. You know, you can say, oh yeah, I agree, it sounds good, but then you're going to get up tomorrow and try to get that promotion anyway, which means you don't understand it. So we have to talk about it, and we have to learn about it. It's very, very delicate. It's very important to study. Nyanjung, okay? Disgust with life. Or renunciation. If you have Nyanjung, can you still have money? If you have Nyanjung, can you still have luxury? Okay. These are questions we'll talk about. What is really Nyanjung? Okay. And is life suffering, or is just part of it suffering? Okay. That's the things we want to talk about. So that's the first attitude, renunciation. Whatever it means, which we'll talk about. Changsen means, Chang means Buddhahood. Stands for Changchu. Sen means mind or state of mind. And the Sanskrit word is Bodhicitta. I should. Sometimes you see this spelled only with a C and not a CH. That's just because there's two chas in Sanskrit. So Western scholars use the first one for the one C by itself for one cha, like the Italian cha, right? Mm-hmm. Afghan, Milanese, you're Milanese, right? And they use CH for the other cha. So I've heard a lot of people say Bodhicitta, you know. Bodhicitta, Bodhi means Buddha, Chitta means mind. Okay. So, question for Bill Kelly. Does it mean Buddha mind? Mind of a Buddha. What do you think?
Sure.
If you have bodhicitta, if you have bodhicitta, do you have the mind of a Buddha? What do you think?
I think you do.
Okay, no. Any
is bodhicitta the same as bodhisattva?
Bodhisattva has bodhisattva. When you get bodhisattva, you're a bodhisattva.
It's the same?
Bodhisattva is the person who has bodhisattva in his mind.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
If it's a path, then you don't have the Buddha mind. You have the aspiration to become a Buddha, isn't that?
Oh, that's a tricky question, you see. I won't get into it.
My question.
Buddhas do have paths.
What?
They have lamas. The
Buddhist
love in a Buddha's heart is a lam also. even though he's reached the end of the lam. It's not acting as a lam for him anymore, technically, because he's already there. But we still call it lam.
But this is a lam's context.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Of a person who hasn't reached. It's the lam in the context of something that gets you to Buddhahood. So it can't be the result.
So, how about if you have bodhicitta, you are a bodhisattva. All Buddhas are bodhisattvas, but not all bodhisattvas are yet Buddhas.
That's right. So what it means is, and it's badly mistranslated, I mean, it's mostly translated as Buddha mind, Bodhi mind. It's very misleading. The full word is not Changsam, it's... you don't have to know this, I'm not going to write it up there. But it's Chang Chuk Du Semke Pa. And sometimes called Semke. Chang Chuk Du Semke Pa. Chang Chuk Du Semke Pa means to get the wish to become a Buddha. To get the wish to become a Buddha. The mind here means wish. The wish to become a Buddha. For other people. To help other people.
That's why I asked before about the distinction between the Mahayana and the Hinayana, because when you said if you've got these three, then you've mastered Buddhism, then by implication, doesn't that mean you can't really master Buddhism in the Theravada schools or the Hinayana schools?
Yeah, right. But if you master Buddhism, you master the Hinayana schools. That's another story. Okay, bodhicitta. So it's the desire. Technically speaking, as you will learn maybe in the third course, this mind refers to your awareness. It's not technically a wish. It's not an emotion. It's not a mental function. It is mind itself. And that's a little difficult to understand. That will come later. Okay, you don't need to know that now. It is actually a state of consciousness. It's what you lose when Mike Tyson punches you. Okay? It's not... It's your awareness. See, it's a very difficult question. When you reach the study of bodhicitta, we will spend weeks on it. And that will come. We'll study that book. It's the first chapter of the Abhisamayamkara by a Sangha. And we'll get there. Okay? And you'll go very deep into what is bodhicitta. You'll go deeper than you can get anywhere else, I would say. You know, and very interesting. Really interesting. By the end, you know what bodhicitta is. If you don't get it, it's your problem. Okay? No, if you don't... If understanding it, you become one of these Dharma monsters who understands everything but didn't develop anything. That's your fault. Okay? The teaching is there. The teaching is pure. The teaching is correct. You will know every detail of it. And if you still don't choose to practice it, then you're just crazy. Okay, bodhicitta. I'm sorry if there's a little shine off the board. Okay, some kind of physics here. People last night were really complaining. There's a haircut. Maybe it's a haircut. Okay, please say Yang Dakpe.
Yang
Dakpe.
Tawa.
Yang Dakpe.
Yang Dakpe.
Tawa.
Yang
Dakpe. Yang Dakpe.
Tawa.
Okay. Yang Dakpa means correct, accurate. Dawa means view, viewpoint. This is the last of the three attitudes. If you have that attitude, if you really develop it, you will become a Buddha. I'll describe a correct view as opposed to an incorrect view, spiritually. All right? I'm in the diamond business. I was brought up from my innocence to try to trick these tricky diamond dealers and get the stones for the best price. And they're talking thousands of stones every day. And you're supposed to outthink them and outsmart them and outtalk them and basically lie. So, so this would happen, you know. I would go into the boss and he would tell me, tell the guy you can only pay $500 when we both know I can pay $1,000. Okay? So I tell the guy I can only pay $500 and he sells it to me for $500 and I think, oh, my boss is a genius, you know, this stone costs $1,000. and we got it for $500. We just made a $500 profit. I lied, and we just made $500. Of course, it was he bought it for $300, but that's another point. which is always the case if he sells it for $500. But that's another point. I lied. Whatever he did is his business. So it looks like if you look at the cause and effect of what just happened, I lied, and it triggered the profit. Okay, I lied, and we just got $500 more. Okay, it looks like the lie caused the money, caused the profit. Okay, if you study cause and effect for a long time, what is a cause? What is a result? What is the nature of a cause? What is the nature of a result? One of the most basic things that you will come to understand, you'll come to really believe it, is that the nature of the cause and the nature of the result have to be the same. They have to be the same. Jesus made a big deal about it in the New Testament. He was talking about plants. He said, if you plant wheat, you cannot get corn. Impossible. Impossible. And there's nothing you can do. Once you've planted the wheat, you can't go to the field and yell at the seed and say, oh, I want you to be corn. I want you to be corn. There's nothing you can do to make it turn into corn at that point. It will not. It's a wheat seed. It has all the little genes or whatever it needs to become wheat inside. But it will not become corn. Impossible. The nature of the seed is wheat. The nature of the result is wheat. There's always this similarity between the cause and the result. Lying is bad. Lying is immoral. Profit is pleasant. Profit is nice. Basically, and it sounds like a child's statement, it sounds very stupid. You can't get a good thing from a bad thing. It's impossible. It cannot occur. It's impossible. And I can say that, and you... It doesn't sink in, you know, it doesn't sound like any big revolutionary thing that you suddenly say, oh yeah, he's right, you know. But I tell you, from one world view, which is what Tao means, it is impossible for a bad deed to create a good result. It's impossible. The money did not come from the lying. The profit cannot come from lying. It's impossible. One is a good thing and one is a bad thing. It's impossible. So what really happened? Yang Da Pe Tao, correct worldview, correct view of reality, says this. You don't look at it like ding ding, lie money. Okay? You turn it this way. You gave money to someone else long ago, at some previous time in your life. Okay? In your lives. You gave money. Therefore, you get money. Okay. And now you're lying, and what will happen? What will happen?
You'll have a diamond someday that you can sell for $1,000 or $500, and somebody will pay you $500, and you'll take it.
Yeah.
That's what will happen someday.
Yeah. Oh, no. You'll be lied to. Or, I mean, if you read the calendar, for example, this year's calendar, the karmic results are basically 4. But some of the results are that no one will believe you. And you see cases like that, where you're telling the truth. God damn, I'm telling the truth. You know? I'm finally telling the truth. And people don't believe you. They just don't believe you. You're telling something that is absolutely the truth. And people don't believe you. That's where that comes from.
So events are random then?
No.
No, I mean...
Exactly the opposite.
Well, but... When something follows something else,
yeah,
like this,
yeah, timing. It's timing. It's timing. Why? Why? It's not my point now to discuss karma. We'll do it, and we'll prove it, and I can prove it. Give me a few weeks, okay? I can prove these things. But if it caused, she said it last night. Anila said it last night. If the lying were the cause of profit, then what? If you wanted to get a profit in the future,
lie.
If just let it go, it's all right. If lying is the cause for profit, then anytime you want a profit, you should just lie, and you will always get the profit. If it's not cause and effect, it won't work all the time. Cause and effect means works all the time. The definition of cause and effect in science, science is correct. You bring together the causes that you know make that result. And I always tell people, if you got to the airport and you're getting on the plane and the stewardess says, we don't quite understand this result of flying. We don't understand the causes very well. We understand half the causes. This plane will stay up half the time. Will you get on? Okay. Is that the real cause? Do they understand the causes? If the plane falls down half the time after takeoff, do they understand the causes of making it fly? No. They understand, they don't understand all the causes. Cause means if you can repeat the exact same causes, the result will always come. That's the nature of causes and results. The fact is, the simple, observable, undeniable fact is that if you lie, you don't always get money. It's not the cause of the money. It is not the cause of the money. It cannot be the cause of the money. So now lying becomes some kind of idiotic thing to do. Because all it can do is cause you some trouble later. You don't have to believe it now. But I'm trying to give you an example of Yang Da Bei Tao. Okay? It's a worldview which most people do not have. It's a worldview that you must develop. And some guy took him 55 seconds or something. But yeah, in 1 minute I can find a scriptural... I can find that the Buddha said something that I'm saying. Okay. Challenge. I'll challenge you. Alright? And it sounds like bragging, but no, it's not. You shouldn't believe me unless I can do that. Okay? You shouldn't believe it. You shouldn't listen to a person teaching Buddhism if you can't do that. Okay? I'm not giving you my ideas. I'm giving you the ideas of a person who's omniscient. He saw 2,500 years ago that we're going to have this class tonight. He sees you thinking what you're thinking now. There's this lousy translation, the close recollection of the Buddha. It's a bad translation of what it means is the Buddha is always here. He knows exactly what we're doing. He knows what you're thinking all the time. We're using his ideas. It's not my ideas. Okay? It's not even Tibetan Lamas. It's not Indian Buddhists. It's the ideas of the Buddha. And he knows all things. So if I can pull out that he said it, that's sufficient. I mean, when we debate in the monastery, there's two ways you can debate. One is, if you can find that the Buddha said it, you win the debate. But you also, if you can prove it with logic, without finding that the Buddha said it, you win the debate. Either way, we have two methods. And you can use, we will use both methods. Now I'd like to take a break. What time is it?
5:03.
Okay. We'll come back at 8:20. Go upstairs. There's no chairs. You can sit on the floor. Please don't be shy. Take these things?
Yeah.
Everybody take a cushion out. And have some tea, cold tea. You can't bring refreshments down here again, okay? That's against Lama's custom. Because you might spill it on a holy book. I'd like you to understand the lineage. The recent lineage of this book, you know, where are you getting it from? In Tibetan, you know, in Buddhism in general, it's considered very, very important to know where the book is coming from. So I don't want you to be, I tell people a story that I was in a train station in India. I had been studying about 2 months at the Tibetan library. We were studying a book called Chinjuk, which is the Bodhicharavatara. And we saw these people running into this room and offering cakes to this Lama, and we asked, who's the Lama, you know, and they said, this is Ling Rinpoche, this is the senior tutor of the Dalai Lama. So we went, we ran, me and this English guy, we ran and bought a cake, stupid little Indian cake, and we ran in and we said, can we offer Ling Rinpoche a cake? And they said, yeah, come in. So we came up to him and we bowed down, and my teacher was standing behind him, and he was sitting on his chair, and he was pretty old at the time. And he said, what are you doing? And where are you from? We said, America and England. And he said, what are you doing? We said, we're studying Buddhism in the library. And he says, well, what book are you studying? And we said, you know, we didn't know the name of the book. And my teacher was behind him going,
What's the name of the book?
Chinju.
Ching.
I don't want you to be like that. I want you to know.
No, what happened? Did you hear your teacher?
We told him Chinju. But then he laughed because he knew that. So I want you to know who wrote the book. You know who wrote the 14 verses now? That was Jason Kava. So who wrote the explanation of the 14 verses? Why is this book 100 pages long instead of only 5 pages long? The commentary was written by Pabongo Rinpoche.
Pabongo Rinpoche came from, you can read it in the book, you don't have to write it down. He came from Sera Monastery, which is one of the three great monasteries in Lhasa. Excuse me?
Sera
I'm about to tell you. He was from the best part of Sera, which is Sera May. And he was from the best house in Sera May, which is Gyorong House, which happens to be my lama's house, and my house, too. So he was generally considered the greatest teacher in Tibet in his times. He passed away in the 40s, early 40s. He was born in the 1870s, something like that. He was not a great student in the monastery. There's different degrees of you get at the end of your studies. The highest is called Haramba, Angidambo. The second is Haramba. The third is Soramba. And then it goes down. Now, he got a Lingse. Lingse means you only get a degree from your college. You don't go and debate at the other colleges. And that's probably what I'll get. And he only got that. He was not the greatest geshe in the monastery. He was a lot like Lama Yeshe. And what happened was that after he graduated, he started teaching small groups of lay people, not monks, which is very unusual. And suddenly, it went wild. I mean, after a few years, it would be 10,000 people coming to his teachings. They would have to rent the largest temple in Lhasa if he went to give a teaching. And he gave it with no microphone, no nothing. He would sit up there and he would teach 10,000 people. I mean, it got to be crazy. The monks started walking from the monastery, Sera and Jebun, to Lhasa every time he gave a teaching. The 13th Dalai Lama begged him to stop because all the geshe candidates were leaving the debate grounds to come to hear him talk. And he just had an incredible ability to teach Buddhism. And he taught it for the common man. He took those 5 books that you're going to study. He had that knowledge of those 5 books, and you can see it throughout his writings. He mastered those 5 books, and then he converted it into something that normal people could study. And that he's an incredible teacher. He's really incredible. And his name is Pabongo Rinpoche. He produced a lot of great teachers. Trijang Rinpoche, who's the Dalai Lama's other teacher. This was his Pabongo's main disciple. Trijang Rinpoche was born, I believe, in 1900 and passed away in 1981. And he was really an incredible scholar. He actually wrote down most of what Pabongo Rinpoche taught. Pabongo Rinpoche didn't sit and write down his lectures, but his main students, another student named Losan Dorje, wrote down what he taught, and then they made books out of it. And the book that he wrote down of Pabongo Rinpoche's, which is called Liberation in Our Hands, became an instant hit. It was carved before Pabongo Rinpoche died. Carving a book in Tibet is a big deal. If they take the time to carve your book out of wood, it was already an incredible hit immediately. I mean, people went wild over this book. It was in 1921, he taught some lectures. And Trijang Rinpoche wrote them down.
What was the name of that one? Liberation?
Liberation in Our Hands. It's sort of a dangerous translation because in English the word it's in your hands means it's up to you now. I did what I could, it's in your hands. But it's not what it means in Tibetan. In Tibetan it means a lama who teaches that book well can put liberation in your hand. And there it is, you got it, you know. It's the word in Tibetan is Lakchang Sutrapa,
ding, there it is. You got it.
Is that the same as liberation in the form?
Yeah. But the meaning is that. He says, okay, you got it. You want it, you got it. That's the meaning of it. Chijo Rinpoche had many great students. This is the student of Chijo Rinpoche from whom we received this. Ken Rinpoche means that he has been the abbot of a major monastery. He's been the abbot of Serame Monastery.
Ken Rinpoche refers to Trijong Rinpoche?
No. Trijong Geshe Nathan Trijong.
Was Trijong Rinpoche the senior or junior tutor?
Junior tutor, but it's pretty much a moot point. It doesn't mean anything.
I know, but people refer to him that way, and I don't know which one.
Yeah, but in the Tibetan, the word is Yongzin for both of them. They say Yongzin Namanyi. They don't say junior or senior. I don't know where exactly that comes from. They do call him the junior tutor.
So in other words, at some point, the junior tutor would be older than the senior tutor?
No, it's not by age, I believe.
So that's, yes, at some point, one would be older than
the senior. Oh, yeah. I'm not sure what that refers to. But in the Tibetan's eyes, they're Yongzhen Nampanyi. They are the two tutors. It's like Me means lower college, because it was lower on the hill a few thousand years ago, you know. So people say lower Tantric college, the Gyume, but it's very misleading. It just means it was physically, the altitude was lower. Ken Rinpoche means this Lama has been the head of a major monastery, the abbot. Ken means abbot. And Geshe means he's reached that degree of a Geshe. Nowadays, Geshe is a little bit delicate. In Tibet, up to 1959, Geshe meant 20, 25 years of intense study and very strict examinations. And now, nowadays, you can pretty much... there are a lot of Geshes who aren't Geshes.
Call yourself a Geshe?
It's getting pretty bad, yeah. They're trying to tighten it up, and they have some new regulations on it. But a lot of people, there are ways to just get your Geshe name and come to Europe or U.S. and teach. And so you have to find out, if you meet someone called a Geshe, say, where did you get that and what did you study? And it's a little dangerous right now. It's a little misleading sometimes now. But he's a real Geshe, Lama Geshe. He was... one of two Geshes out of maybe 17 or 18,000 monks in Lhasa at the time who received the highest Geshe degree in that year from the Dalai Lama. And Lobsang Thachin is his monk's name. Okay. So he's my teacher, and he's the student of Trijong Rinpoche, from whom this teaching comes down to you.
Geshe Lobsang Thachin is the same person.
And he actually also studied with Padmanabha Rinpoche in Tibet. And he's teaching in New Jersey, not as much as he used to do. He's about 72 now. And he was born in 1921. And if you can get a chance, if any time you get a chance, it's very wonderful if you can. So that's how it comes down to you. I'm going to teach you one more word. This is the tantric name. Tantric means secret Buddhism. Okay. We won't study tantra in the 5-year course. Okay. In Tibet, in the old days, you're not allowed to study tantra until you're a Geshe. You're not allowed to enter the tantric colleges until you're a Lhasa Geshe. That's to study the real theory behind tantra. In the tantric monasteries, you had to have that. That was the minimum. All right, you had to be one of the best 16 monks out of the whole graduating monks that year. Very difficult. Dechen Nyingbo was the tantric name of Pabongko Rinpoche. Dechen means great bliss. You had another Chen tonight. What was that?
Chen.
Yeah, Lama Rinpoche.
Tsongkhapa's great book. So Chen means big, and De means bliss. Great bliss. And Ningbo means essence. Essence of great bliss. So if you take all the happiness you ever had, throw out all the little ones, take the biggest three happinesses you ever had in your life, squish them into a few seconds, that's Deqian, all right? That's Deqian Ningbo. Actually, that's the meaning of it. I mean, it's such an intense feeling of bliss that you took all the good feelings you ever had in your life and had that whole emotion in a minute or half a minute, that would be Deqian Ningbo. That's a tantric name of Pabongka Rinpoche. That just about tells you everyone who wrote the book, all right? We're not going to do much Buddhism tonight beyond that, all right? You have to know who wrote the book. In case you meet Dalai Lama or something, he asks you, what are you studying?
Where does a Tisha fit into all this?
We'll get there. I'll show you. One more word. It's a lot of names, but it would be considered improper not to know them all. Lawandrapa was a student of Tsongkhapa's. His story, we don't know much about him. There's not much left records about him. He wasn't one of the big students like the first Dalai Lama who studied with Tsongkhapa, Chen Tsongkhapa. But he was one of his students. He spent time with Chen Tsongkhapa, he studied with him, and then he went out to eastern Tibet and he founded 108 monasteries. Tsongkhapa said, I want 108 monasteries. He went out. Before he died, he did it. And basically, he was going out to back home where he had grown up, which is in Giron, which is on the Chinese border, Chinese and Tibetan border.
What is it called?
Gyalrong. And it's in the book. He went back and he founded those monasteries, and so Jen Tsongkhapa would send him letters of advice. So apparently Ngawandrapa requested something brief and easy that he could teach to these barbarians out in East Tibet. Not barbarians, but people who didn't know Buddhism very well. And that's why Jen Tsongkhapa wrote the book you're going to study. It's actually a letter. Those 14 verses are a letter that Jen Tsongkhapa wrote to Ngawandrapa. What you're about to study, in my opinion, is maybe the most important Buddhist work ever written. Because on that 14 verses, based on that 14 verses, you can achieve enlightenment. You cannot do that with a Heart Sutra. You cannot do that with a Diamond Sutra. You can't do it with the 8,000 verse perfection of wisdom. You can do it with these 14 verses, according to Tsongkhapa. Who should know? And it's funny because it's stuck in his minor works, you know, because it's short. So it's stuck in between a few letters he wrote to somebody. So Ngawandrapa. Like all good Tibetans, Ngawandrapa has at least three different names, which will drive you crazy. And I'd like you to know one of them. What do you mean?
What's one monk name?
Yeah. Very common. I mean, and it's bad when you're trying to learn Tibetan, and he mentioned Atisha. Atisha has Atisha, Marmedze, Jo Rinpoche, Jo Je. He's got like 6-8 names, and it drives you crazy until you learn how it goes.
Which is the monk's name, and which is the...
Ngawandrapa is his ordination name, the name he got when he became a monk. When you become a monk, you get a new name. The first name is taken from your... preceptor's first name. You always get the name, the first name of the Lama who gave you your vows. So my monk's name is Lobsang, because my teacher's monk's name is Lobsang. The last abbot of Serame, or the next to the last, three abbots ago, his name was Jamba. He served for 12 years. He made all the monks during 12 years. there's about 400 jhampas in Serame. It's a big problem. Everyone has a first name. Same first name. Okay. So, Tsako Wombo. Say, Tsako.
Tsako
Wombo. This is a name by which Ngawandapa is known. Some people use, sometimes you might say Ngawandapa and somebody says Wuhu and you say Tsako Wombo. Okay. That's his sort of a nickname. Tsako is a line of kings from eastern Tibet. And Wombo is his, it means monk. In the colloquial of that little district, like down in that little place, they call it Wombo. You will never hear that word in anywhere else. We translate it as friar because it's such a rare word for a monk. Very few people will ever understand that word. I'm going to hand out your homework. Let me make sure I gave you everything on it. Oh, this is one of the letters he said. There's a whole... Yeah. Oh, by the way, we're talking about the root text, which is only 14 verses. If you open up that little orange book, you'll see sections that have dark black print. Those are the letter. And then the rest is Avongka Rinpoche's explanation of the letter. So if you flip through, you'll see some dark print in blocks that are verses. That's the letter. Those are the lines from the letter. And then Avongka Rinpoche is explaining the letter.
Transcribed by Trigen Rinpoche.
Not in this case.
No.
This particular book was transcribed from Avongka Rinpoche's lectures by a monk named Losan Dorje, who's not the Losan Dorje you know.
Yes.
Okay. But he also transcribed some other important books. I believe he transcribed the Nyanjoma commentary. So he did a really great thing for us. Okay, the only other thing in your homework that we haven't covered is you have to memorize something. By the way, when you make an answer in the homework, put the Tibetan in English letters, okay? And then put the English. So if I ask you, what is the first of the three principal paths, what will you write? Which is the first? Yeah, okay, Nyanjung. Say, Nyanjung.
Nyanjung.
So you have to write Nyanjung, and then you write renunciation next year. Okay, if I ask you for the second principal path?
Chang-sem.
If I ask you for the third? Alright, good. If I ask you for the author of the root text, if I ask you for who wrote the explanation of that text, who was it written for? Tsako Wombo Ngawandapa. Okay. Alright, like that. So put the English letters of the Tibetan and then put the Tibetan. And you're responsible for anything on this at the beginning of the next class. Alright?
For a quiz.
Yeah, for a quiz. Nothing on the quiz will not come from here. Okay?
Nothing on the quiz.
Everything on the quiz will come from here. Alright?
It's oral?
No.
No.
Yeah, and I'll correct it and you'll get it back. If you fail more than two quizzes, you're out. You can come to Friday night, cookie class. I just want you to know this stuff well. And I wanted, my dream of this particular school is that if in 5 years from now, if you say, I was at the first course and I passed, then they know you're qualified. They know that you understand that stuff pretty much. okay, you passed all the quizzes, you passed all the homework, you stuck it out. And I can say to people, well, here's a list of people who passed the first course. They're qualified to explain it to you. That's what I want. That's what I really want. I want a network of people who can pass it on to other people. Otherwise, it will die with us. And you know, the people who have been around Tibetans for a long time, the old teachers are gone. It's foolish to think they're going to last much longer. The teachers who really know their stuff from Tibet, my teacher is the youngest you can be and have finished Tantric College. Because the year after he finished, he ran away. He finished in 58, he left in 59. He's the youngest you can be and have trained everything in Tibet. So he's 72. He's 72. There are six people left like him. Lati Rinpoche, Kelna Rinpoche, Geshe Toshin. We counted them with Lati Rinpoche one day in a car. There's only six left. I don't remember exactly. One of them is the Gundan Chief right now. He's the head of the Gundans. I don't remember.
Are all of them out of Tibet?
Yeah. We're talking out of Tibet. There's, I'm not aware of
you
any...
You are still coming out.
I'm not aware of any. There is. No, I'm not aware of. There may be one more in Tibet that I know of. But I'm not sure. And those people were in prison for 20 years, 15 years. They forgot a lot of what they knew. They didn't have a chance to see both of us. Okay. There's one more thing down at the bottom here. It says memorization assignment. Memorize the verse for refuge and the wish. That's the second page in your notebook. So please turn to that. Okay, it's at the top it says Gyabdo Semke. Okay. Gyabdo Semke. You have to be able to write out on the quiz next week the English letters for the Tibetan and the English.
Spell
it correctly.
Tibetan.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to spell it like this. Because I have many. I mean, I
can
have this
like
version,
this.
But it's.
Yeah, like this. I can't have like 50 versions. I can't check it, okay?
All right. Can you say it again?
You have to memorize. You have to be able to. If I ask, okay, Ojura, you tell me this four lines, you have to say, Sangye Chodan, Toki Chodan Na, Chanju Padu, Dani Kapsu Ji, Daki Jinsu Jibi, Sunaki Dolphin, Sangye Chodan. That's all. Okay, no big deal. In the monastery, this would be a 15-minute assignment.
In English, right?
You have to say those... Yeah, in the English letters. That's Tibetan, in the English letters. Okay? And you also have to memorize the English translation at the bottom.
Thank you.
So okay. These four shalakas turn into...
four lines.
Three in English.
Four lines turn into three tiny little... Yeah. They hang together that way.
And this is for
Monday night. Yeah. And it's going to go like that. This is the way it's going to be. If you feel that you can't memorize that much or you can't do that much work, I'm asking for 2 to 3 hours of homework a week. Okay. If you feel you can't do it, then don't come. Okay. Really, I want people who are serious and who will come out as good teachers. Okay. This is really a minimum. The other people are memorizing it in Tibetan, all right? They're writing it in Tibetan.
Huh? We're doing
yeah, in a way. Alright. Now, if you don't have time or the desire, you won't make it. And you don't really want it that bad. Then don't come. You know, come Friday night. And you get a little dose of Tibetan and some good Tibetan Buddhism, and that's enough. You know. Yes?
Since we're on such an important task here, can we sort of do it the right way and, you know, say some prayers at the beginning and
we'll
the end?
We'll get there. That's what we're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. But we'll say them from memory. All right? So next, we'll do one until we get... There's three basic prayers that we say during class, before class and after class. And we'll talk about it next week. But I want you to get this one under your belt. And we'll talk about the meaning of it next week. It's typical in a Tibetan monastery, you memorize the stuff first, you come in, and the teacher explains it to you, and then you'll never forget it. It's really a good system. I had to memorize the Abhidhamma Kosha, the first three chapters, before I was allowed to study it. And Abhisamankara, eight chapters, before we studied it. So you have to. It's a minimum. If you can't do it, I already said that. Okay. Meditation assignment. It says at the bottom, 15 minutes per day, breathe to 10, and then do meditation on renunciation. By the way, I'll hand these out. I hope there's enough. If there's not, then the two couples we have, please share, okay? Three couples.
Are these paragraph breaks important?
In the English? Yeah.
This
you can write on. Please don't write on any text, but you're welcome to write on, you have to write on the homework. You write directly onto the homework, onto the sheet, yeah. You'll get that sheet back, corrected, and you'll put it in your notebook, and when you teach your own students, you have already the quizzes together.
If we've memorized different translations,
because we're going to say it together. I prefer to say it in Tibetan, but...
Also, the next to the last word, Yuktasho, or
Yuktasho.
Yuktasho. Mm-hmm. Yuktasho, whatever.
Yuktasho, yeah.
There's an alternative word that's used in
that. Yeah, there is several alternatives. Sorry, you're stuck with this one. We have to standardize some things. And then you can, you know, if you've learned it a different way, you can say that way at home.
Right. In the privacy of
your home. No, it's okay. But we have to, we can't, I have to, this comes from a standard principle. Some of these verses come from Nagarjuna. Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, it's more than once. Okay. Now, the last thing on the homework says that you have to do some meditation. Did everybody get homework?
No.
No.
Were there too few? Kylie, can you give up one? Do you have two?
We only have one.
Okay. Here.
Janet has an extra. Okay. Okay. Next time, I'll be better prepared. There's a few more people than interviewed. Broke the rules. Okay.
You're going to have more stuff or you're convinced there'll be less students?
Well, we'll see. The last thing says meditate on renunciation. It says do analytical meditation. This is a kind of meditation where you just think in your mind. We got an explosion here. The reason.
No.
No.
Yes, next time put him out there. Okay. You think in your mind, you sit down in a quiet place for 15 minutes a day, breathe 10 times. Breathing, we'll explain it later. Basically, not like that. One breath out your nose and one breath in your nose. Not through your mouth. Okay? Number one means... And not, okay, not English way. Out and in is one. And then out and in is two. And just count up to 10. You will lose count before you hit 5. Your mind will go somewhere else. Start back again. Start over again. Be persistent until you hit 10. When you hit 10, you'll see yourself going to 11 and 12.
And then what?
Yeah, yeah. Stop. Yeah, start over again.
Is it time to use mala?
You can, but it's not necessary. The main thing is the mental exercise, right? The function of breathing meditation, which is taught in the Abhidhamma Kosha very clearly, and which you will study from the Abhidhamma Kosha, is to put your mind into neutral. Okay? Your mind has been busy during the day, gotta make this, gotta do this. And the function of the breathing is probably, I guess it is, that you cannot count to 10 until your mind is pretty much down to neutral. Can you open the front door? That's probably Michael Wicker. So that puts your mind into neutral. And then you aim the mind on a virtuous object, on a good object. The object we're choosing here is try to think over reasons why you should be disgusted with life. Okay. Consider the question.
is life so bad that I have to come to a 5-year Buddhism course? Seriously.
Okay.
Seriously. This is why you are here. Okay? If you're not convinced of this thing, you shouldn't be here. There's no reason to take this course. Okay? The object of this course is to learn the theory behind removing the unpleasant things of your life. And you have to be convinced to do well in this course. Otherwise, you'll drop out. Wanting to know Tibetan, wanting to master the 5 big books, you know, wanting whatever you want to come here is not enough to get you through 5 years. Okay? You'll have to be somehow think that this will help you get rid of the bad things in your life. And it will. All of them. Okay? And I'm talking big time. Kiga Nachi. Okay? Last thing. I keep saying last thing.
Is that an I at the end or a...
It's an I. Meditation classes. Unless it's dog meditation.
You give them dog biscuits in there.
We feed them like at 11 o'clock and it knocks them out. These are the 4 great sufferings. Kye means having to be born into this kind of a body. Kye means having to take birth.
Any birth or just human birth?
Any birth. Any birth which occurs involuntarily. Basically. That's Kye.
What is Kye?
Kye means to take birth. To be born.
When you say involuntarily, do you mean to take birth at all or not where you want to be born and how you want to be?
Well, let's say to take birth in this kind of a body. Flesh and blood.
Samsaric, I mean, is that easy enough? Samsaric body or what?
Later. Okay.
Did you say voluntary or involuntary?
Involuntary, please. Ga means getting old. It starts when?
As soon as you birth.
Second year old. It starts at conception. He's right. You start to get your wrinkles the second after your parents conceive. Okay. Getting old. Na means getting sick. I once translated for the Tibetan, His Holiness's doctor. There were about 50 people in the audience. Just before he stopped speaking, he said, "Anyone who has a medical problem, come see me tomorrow or the next day." And it looked like you guys. It looked like a normal group of people, you know. And I had to translate for the next 2 or 3 days. And every single person came. And many of them had very horrible things. But it looked like normal old people, you know. It looked like a normal group of people. But everyone had some horrible thing, you know. It was like, ugh. And that's the way it is. Everyone has something. Okay. We will study that. Actually, tomorrow night we'll study that. The nature of your body, he defined it. He said, health is an accident. He said, health is not the normal condition of the human body. He said that. He said, yeah. He said it's a temporary, propitious balance of all the elements. It's like a juggler getting all the balls up perfectly for 1 second. And the nature is not that.